there is not a place where AI replaces humans or replaces clinicians. It is a tool that our healthcare providers will use as they practice medicine.
It wasn't about reinventing the ideation process. It's about how can we do ideation better as we use AI.
It's helpful to think about AI as part of a system of capability. So it's not a magical thing you're sprinkling over a domain or area. It's actually an augmentation to a workflow that right now is largely done by humans.
AI is without doubt going to influence how we do our jobs in the future, and it has the potential to do better for our patients.
Hello, and welcome back to a new episode of Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry, brought to you by the Wharton School in collaboration with Accenture. My name is Christian Terbisch. I'm a professor here at the Wharton School. I also co-direct our Mac Institute for Innovation Management. Over the four episodes that make up this season, I've had the privilege of speaking with a remarkable set of industry leaders in the space of AI. What made these conversations especially valuable is that they really touched on the practical realities of innovation, workflow design, and improvements in human capability. Today, I want to walk you through some of the season highlights, not only to recap, but to connect them into a set of hopefully cohesive lessons. We began the season in one of the most regulated and high-stakes environments, and that is in healthcare. My conversation with Lara Liss, Chief Privacy and Data Trust Officer at GE Healthcare, emphasized that innovation must be paired with responsibility. And as someone who studies process design, I found it compelling that her starting point in the AI transformation journey was not technical excellence, it was governance and organization.
At its core, responsible AI is about trust, and trusting that an organization has the right safeguards in place to deliver AI that is reliable, safe, and meets legal and regulatory requirements for how it will operate. When companies ask how to start this work, the first step is to get together a cross-functional team of your subject matter experts at the organization who each bring an important perspective to the table on responsible AI, including data scientists, product teams, IT, cybersecurity, legal, privacy, regulatory, your quality folks, risk management, compliance, your human resources team, your finance team, government relations, and even communications.
What struck me was the discipline of integrating these principles from the beginning of the development process. In operations terminology, this is designing quality into the process rather than inspecting it at the end. Next, let's turn to my favorite topic, the human in the loop.
So having a human in the loop is one of the required elements under the EU AI Act, and it is something that we have built into our responsible AI program. There is not a place where AI replaces humans or replaces clinicians. It is a tool that our healthcare providers will use as they practice medicine.
My takeaway, AI is powerful, but when lives are at stake, like they are in medicine, legal accountability and moral responsibility matter as much as technical capabilities. AI can assist clinicians. It does not replace their judgment. Put differently, safety and system design are not obstacles to innovation. They really should enable innovation. In episode 2, I welcomed Alfredo Colas, Chief Data and AI Officer at Procter & Gamble. Our discussion zoomed in on creativity and innovation, topics close to my research and teaching. We often hear that AI will automate routine work so that humans can spend more time being creative. Alfredo really challenged that view. He suggested that AI is not just freeing up time for human creativity. Instead, the AI is actively participating in the creative problem solving.
It's about how can we do ideation better as we use AI. As a matter of fact, we did a hackathon with the Wharton School of Business, where we put over 700 of our experts from marketing and R&D and look at how we could leverage AI as part of our ideation processes. What we saw is this new concept of the cybernetic teammate, where we could see AI helping both our marketing and our R&D specialists come up with better and more holistic ideas than when they were working individually or even when they were working together, but without the support of AI.
As someone who has written the textbook for innovation tournaments and hackathons, for me, this was a profound insight. If you design innovation systems around AI as a collaborator rather than as a replacement for the human creative problem solver, you unlock new forms of ideation. And that way, your tournaments become more powerful than ever before. The key idea behind innovation tournaments is to democratize innovation. If you truly want everybody to be an innovator, you need to provide your employees with the data and the insights.
Let me give you an example on democratizing knowledge. We had a central team that was curating all the knowledge P&G had in one certain domain. And they came to us and we partnered in putting together that knowledge all into a vector database and making it available through GenAI and RAG. Well, the moment we launched that, the system got more queries in the first month than the central team had received in the last 10 years. So again, there was a desire to access that knowledge.
Creativity should not be reserved to a small group of experts. When you give people access to knowledge, creative problem solving becomes distributed and innovation will happen naturally. Despite all of the power of AI, humans remain the ultimate decision makers. They are needed, especially when it comes to picking the best ideas and then taking full responsibility for the ideas and their implementation. Episode 3 took us inside the enterprise-level transformation. Radha Plum, Vice President of AI Transformation at IBM, explained something that every operations scholar understands. Productivity comes from process redesign, not from automation alone. Let's hear what Radha has to say about my human-in-the-loop workflow.
I actually like to think of it as human-on-the-loop, which is where in the process and how do you want to think about what is delegated and what that means. And that can range from things like task assistance to full-on automation and everything in between. The way we approach it is actually, ironically, from the human side, which is what are the set of inputs that are going into the humans performing the task now? And what are the set of outputs we need to come out of this stage in the process? Once you have those two endpoints, you can now look in between as to what are the core steps and activities that need to happen and what level of delegation do you want.
That framing human on the loop has stayed with me. It moves the conversation away from the human being a cog in the machine towards human accountability and process ownership. This has profound implications for how we design workflows.
It's helpful to think about AI as part of a system of capability. So it's not a magical thing you're sprinkling over a domain or area. It's actually an augmentation to a workflow that right now is largely done by humans. So what does that mean? It means in your everyday job, you're looking at a workflow and thinking, how do I design this process with all the tools available to me?
Here's my takeaway. The formula for process redesign and enterprise transformation is the same whether you're dealing with industrial manufacturing or with knowledge work. Eliminate waste, simplify tasks, and then automate what remains. In summary, AI amplifies good workflows, but it cannot compensate for bad workflows. We close the season looping back to healthcare, though this time taking a practitioner's perspective. Dr. Pari Panthari Pandey, Chair of Radiology at Penn Medicine, reminded us how far AI still has to go. I learned from Pari that reading an image is only a small piece of the work of what a radiologist does. Being a great radiologist means operating in a context where the task is not a simple binary detection, but a holistic diagnostic synthesis.
And that is what ensures that you don't miss something when you're looking at the film, and that you specifically look at each of the parts of the study that are important to the study at one time. There's the history in the film, but I think probably more important to radiologists is to have that entire search pattern sort of down as they go through studies. For example, in an abdominal CT scan, you want to make sure you look at the lung bases. You want to make sure you look at the bones. Even if the problem is the liver, you want to make sure that you do all these things systematically.
The other insight I had in the discussion with Pari relates to the future of work in an AI-driven profession. At the end of the day, radiologists are there to help the patient. That is what Clayton Christensen refers to as a job to be done.
AI is without doubt going to influence how we do our jobs in the future, and it has the potential to do better for our patients. We go into medicine to help people. We go into medicine to help patients. And so if I think about my younger self entering the field of medicine, I should ask myself the same question that you should always ask when you're entering medicine. What would help me be the best doctor that I can be? And I think that the answer to that is to understand this incredibly rapidly evolving technology that is AI.
As an operations scholar, I'm also intrigued by what better and cheaper imaging will do to the demand for imaging. Even if AI improves efficiency, imaging volume will likely rise in response. That's why I would not bet on a major job loss in radiology anytime soon. Looking across the season, one conclusion stands out clearly. AI implementation is not a technical challenge, it is a leadership and workflow design challenge. The technology is often ready, it's only going to get better. By definition, our current AI is the dumbest technology that we will use over the next decades. The real question is whether our workflows, incentives, and governance structures are ready to embrace it. Put differently, AI does not remove the need for human judgment, it elevates the importance of it. That brings us to the end of season 4. If you haven't yet listened to all the episodes from the season, I encourage you to do so. You have been listening to Where AI Works, Conversations at the Intersection of AI and Industry, brought to you by Wharton in collaboration with Accenture. I'm Christian Terwisch, and on behalf of all of us here at the Wharton School, thank you for listening.